What is up, business owners, entrepreneurs, and probably my grandma? This is Business Vibe. Today's interview is with Omari Harabin, owner of Squarespace Themes. This is seriously one of my favorite interviews. Omari has built a million-dollar business without worrying about coding, without worrying about competition, and creating a literal million-dollar mindset.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background?
Sure. My name is Omari Harabin, and background, I went to school for engineering, and I, after my first internship, realized that mechanical engineering wasn't going to be like a long-term career for me. I then went to grad school for marketing, and I wanted to figure out how I could like basically bridge my technical mindset and background with like a business mindset, and started working again. I was in the engineering field and I was in a corporate environment, and I was like, this is not me. I need to find something that is more reflective of who I want to be and how I want to become. And then I found out I was becoming a dad, and there was no better time to turn my life around than when I'm creating a new one. So I took that energy, but I also was going through a crisis where I had a DUI that meant that my work situation was going to have to change. And so this crisis of a DUI arrest, as well as a child on the way, turned into me leaving my job, becoming obviously a dad, and figuring it out on my own. So for the past 10 years, that's what I've been up to. I've been figuring out how to make a living on the internet, using my interest, using my skills, leveraging everything that I have within me. And that's why I'm here.
That's awesome. So how long have you been doing your current business?
Yeah. So right now, my main business, we sell Squarespace plugins and templates. Squarespace is a website building platform. So folks who want to build a website and they need additional services related to Squarespace, we fill that gap. So we're in year 9 this summer of SquarespaceThemes.com. And yeah.
And what inspired you to start your theme store?
Yeah. So I had been like the first year freelancing as a creative, making websites, doing videos, creating content for small brands, nonprofits. What I realized is a very typical path of like, you know, just freelancing and trying to figure it out. And the thing that I always like, my core passion is coaching and mentoring. And that's like instinctively what I wanted to do. However, I didn't have a business of my own to validate what I was learning. I didn't have a business of my own to really work on and prove out what I wanted to share with my clients. So after, you know, going through the trove of depression that first year, there were several, but after that first year, it was like, okay, I need something of my own. And I don't know exactly what that is, but a friend of mine was like, if you could just do one thing right now that lights you up, that gets you excited, that, you know, makes you want to do something, what would it be? And I had done videos. Like I said, I was doing photography. I was doing a whole lot of creative things, but websites was the thing I kept going back to, Squarespace websites in particular. And I'd been interested in websites from I was like 13, 14. I made my first one. But I always did it on the side. It was never something that I took serious or never something that I felt like someone would pay me for, because after all, I could do it myself. And then second of all, I'm using a platform that enables you to do it yourself. So why would someone pay me for this? But turns out that's what I was enjoying doing the most. So I decided that that's what I was going to focus on. And I would use that to have a reason to figure out the market and stuff. So it's like, all right, I've got this service I want to offer. I've been learning all of this internet marketing stuff. Let me apply that to this service and build a business from there. So after a month or two of having that really clear focus of, okay, I'm trying to get clients for a Squarespace web design business, I noticed that there weren't any third-party templates for Squarespace. And that's something I saw with WordPress. Every other platform had some sort of template market or some sort of marketplace for themes. So I decided, well, it might not be possible today. This is summer 2015, but at some point in the future, people are going to want this. I want it. And so let me create a theme shop so that when that demand does grow and rise, then I'm here to meet it. So that's the founding story. And obviously that's 9 years ago. And since then, everything I envisioned has materialized.
So that's awesome. You were one of the very first people to do themes for Squarespace then.
Yeah, basically. There was another shop at the time, and that was it.
I'm sure the competitive market is a lot tougher now.
Yeah, for sure. It's been interesting to watch, because you always study like marketing sophistication and what happens when a market grows and there's more competitors. And so I've been able to like watch that with this market particularly. And it's interesting because you always have to have like a forward thinking mindset in order to really capitalize on the present. So what I found is that as the market has grown, people only see what has come before and they think, oh, it's already saturated. Oh, this already exists. Oh, there's no sense or purpose for me here. But I'm not here because I was looking backwards. I'm here because I was looking forward at demand that I knew would inevitably come. I anchor all of my market foresight, wherever it is, into like these inevitabilities, these things that are bound to happen because either they've happened somewhere else or there's human nature that's bound to kick in. For example, human nature in this case is the desire to make something your own and to customize something and to have something that sets you apart and make you different. That's literally what I'm capitalizing on every day, are these inevitabilities and these, you know, human nature things that are always going to be true.
You had this kind of vision for how things were going. How did you validate your idea? Or how, I guess, did you get that first piece of validation that you were on the right path?
So I failed immediately for a few years. So quickly I realized, okay, I don't have the skill set to design these templates and develop them myself. The things that I wanted to create were like really unique, and I just couldn't cross this like creative threshold of not copying something or not imitating something. And I didn't want to imitate anything else. I wanted everything to be original, but I didn't have the skill set for that. So I tried to find designers, but none of them were sold on the idea because they're like, no one, this doesn't exist. It's hard. Technically, it's not really feasible. So I literally sat on it for a while. And in the meantime, though, I realized, okay, people might not be looking for templates right now, but they are still looking to customize the template they already have. So for the first 2 years, that's what I was doing. I was just customizing people's existing templates with the web skill sets that I had. And that really just bought me time where, okay, my initial idea wasn't validated. I still needed to stay in the game. And then after a few years, maybe by 2018, other template shops started to pop up. So that kind of validated it for me, where it's like, okay, I might not be able to do this myself, but others are clearly capable and I can become an affiliate of theirs. So in 2018, I made this shift where I was like, okay, I can just become an affiliate of all of these template shops and I still get to focus on what I care about, which is the marketing. And so my problem was a fulfillment problem. I couldn't validate the idea because I really couldn't fulfill the idea myself. But the validation came by being able to observe that it was working and then simply being able to partner with those template shops.
So there's so many beautiful pieces of wisdom here and so many shifts that you took to get to where you are today. Mm-hmm. So is that kind of your current, what you currently do is you're an affiliate?
I am. And it's still a small part of my business overall. The thing that really took off was selling plugins. There are also a couple of plugin shops on the market at that time. And I thought, well, this is already done. There's nothing for me to do here. I know I don't have this skill set either, so let me not waste my time. However, I was working with a developer on these one-on-one projects, customizing sites, and we got a couple of repeat requests. So within the space of a week or two, there was like some very specific functionality that clients were requesting. So immediately I'm like, okay, how can we not repeat this again? How can we take this thing that this code that we've created one time or two times for these clients, and how can we package it, put it on the shelf? So just in case next week someone comes along, they could just buy it off the shelf. And so that kickstarted really the growth of the business, because now there was a product or products that were already in demand that people were looking for. And so that really just kind of opened up the pie, so to speak, where I could do the affiliate stuff because now there was some fulfillment already in place. And as an affiliate, it meant that I could continue to serve my customers with more of the things that they would ultimately be looking for.
Okay. And so like your current business model where you are right now, are you strictly affiliate or have you hired designers to do like your own thing?
I'm still mostly an affiliate. So there's kind of like a gray area of like joint venture/partnerships. And so, but essentially all of, or most of my fulfillment is affiliate. So whether it's a service or a product, I'm the marketing arm of the puzzle. And the way I build my relationships is, you know, I'll just send you traffic, or I'll send you, you know, sales, and you can pay me after, or pay me before, whichever one's convenient.
Nice. Okay. So what's on your website, does it redirect to other people, and you don't do any processing?
Well, we process plugins. And so that's kind of like the in-house thing, but the templates and anything else, that's all affiliate based. And so they go to other websites.
What a great idea. And so this would be a good time for me to ask you, what is your revenue kind of look like?
Last year, well, I'll give you like the big picture. Just the plugin side of the business, we've done more than $1 million since, I guess, 2018. And on the affiliate side, I wish I knew the exact number, but it's probably a few hundred thousand in terms of affiliate revenue.
Good for you. So you're selling the affiliate themes. Do you have any part of the design process, and how do you like ensure that these themes are meeting the customer needs and you're actually selling something that people want?
Yeah, good question. I have like a really good sense of quality up front. So my intuition is usually right in terms of that. And so I don't have affiliate partners who I wouldn't recommend. You know, it's kind of like, would I recommend this? Would I purchase this myself? Do I have clients or customers who I know this would benefit? If it checks those boxes, then yeah, it's pretty easy. Yes.
So my last question on the product, and then I'd like to move into marketing is, how do you handle maintenance for your themes? Like, do you send your customer straight to the person who's actually making the theme?
Yep. So I'm just sending them directly to, so all of the fulfillment, the support, the maintenance, customer care, all of that is handled by those designers and template shops themselves. I'm literally just a channel.
I'm sorry to be jumping around, but I keep thinking of all these questions because it's so, what you're doing is so fascinating. What's the revenue share look like kind of with your affiliates? Yeah. 50-50 or?
It's mostly like the average is like 30%. Some of them, it might be like 20 or 10. And then the closer the relationship, meaning like the more hands-on I am, then it will be a 50-50 revenue split. So like, for example, I just acquired a template shop a couple weeks ago that now I'm a part of the, you know, the full thing there. And that's a 50-50 revenue split with the, you know, the creator of that template shop.
I'm really excited to move into the marketing and sales aspect of this, as it seems like that's really what you're hands-on doing. What marketing strategies have been most effective in promoting your theme store?
So everything for me is, it starts with search. So I'm guided by what I'm looking for. So again, in the beginning, I was looking for third-party templates. They didn't exist. So my natural thought process is to create what I was looking for and put it where it didn't exist. Because I know that if I'm looking for something, other people are going to be looking for it after me or behind me. And so that is like the cycle that keeps my business flowing, is I follow my interests. I follow what I'm curious about, what I'm searching for. And if I have a problem, naturally, I'm going to search for a solution. If I don't find that solution and I come up with one, I'll share it. And now anyone else who's searching, they're going to find what I left behind. So that is my SEO strategy in a nutshell. It's different than the typical method of like, you know, combing through keywords and trying to come up with things. I find that exhausts me. It could be a fun game sometimes, but I find that I'm better when I'm just aligned with like what I really care about and then creating in alignment with that. So that's strategy number one is SEO. And then the other thing is email marketing. So email marketing is really like the heart of my business, because once someone becomes a plugin customer, now they're in my world where for years, you know, as long as they're subscribed, they're going to learn about new templates, new plugins, new integrations, other random things I'm up to. And so my email list is really like the thing that I always go back to if I have something new. I also do like sponsored emails. It's like a muscle. I treat the whole sharing thing like a skill that I have to exercise. And so I'm always exercising, okay, what can I share that's going to be useful? What can I share that will help people? And so there's SEO, there's email, and then finally there's community. So the community piece is I have a Facebook group that I started the same time that I started the site. And my attitude towards the market as a whole is I'm not here to compete with anyone. And that's really what has given me the long staying power and like sustainability is you can't compete with me. I'm actually here to serve anyone who would potentially be competition. If you have, if you're coming into the market with something to offer that I know that the market will benefit from, I want to help you, and I want to help you accelerate that process. The community allows me to, one, it allows me to share continually. It gives me, you know, form relationships, friendships, and there's that continual kind of social proof, which you need, where it's like, you're not really anyone on the internet unless there are other people who can like validate and confirm, oh yeah, this is so-and-so and they actually do this. They're not just like a random person in an ad with nothing behind it. That helped me really early on with social proof, you know, the email list and SEO. Those three things are kind of my marketing trifecta.
And I imagine that marketing list and the niche you're kind of in is you guys all kind of grow together. Where they grow, they're going to need more and more, and then you'll be able to service that too.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. It's very collaborative. And because I was so early in the market, it's kind of grown with this kind of a culture of collaboration and like, hey, we're not here to compete with each other because we're all filling different gaps. If there's some overlap, cool, you know, who cares? But at the end of the day, you know, everyone eats.
I'm super excited to ask this question because you talk about really helping your customer and kind of having that foresight of what do they need over the traditional and what a lot of people would think of, hey, let me just do all of this research just because let me see what the competition is doing. And so with your way of doing kind of that SEO marketing, and, you know, you hear a lot of talk about businesses that have been impacted by these SEO updates and really hurting their business. What have you been experiencing through these updates?
Nothing's really changed for me. It's tough, right? Like I've had periods where like I'll obsess about SEO and I'll just kind of be focused on it for a few months. It gets me in that like competitive frame of mind because with SEO, it's all about outranking the competition. And if I'm in that state of mind, it doesn't actually serve me holistically. It doesn't serve me long time. It kind of isolates me and puts me in a place where I don't want to be. So I try not to pay attention to things that will bring me out of like a mindset that is more collaborative and optimistic and forward thinking. And so paying attention to like a lot of like the scary things, like that just brings me out of where I operate the best, right? It takes me out of like an optimistic state where I can see opportunities, I can uncover things. So I haven't really been affected. But I've also been like really excited because with AI, the way I see it, it's like for 2 decades, we have been trying to optimize for a machine that is dumb, that just doesn't really understand what's going on. Now we have a machine that's moderately smart. You know, it's more intelligent at coming up with things than I can in a moment, right? So all of our previous efforts to optimize are about to be like no longer needed because as long as you are human, that's what this new machine wants to learn from, right? It's trying to learn direct. It's a large language model, right? These large language models, they're trying to learn from us. So the more unique you are in your language, the more unique you are in just whatever it is that you're bringing to the internet, the easier it is for you to be found by the people who are looking for you. Like, I don't know how you found me. But I imagine there was a curiosity, there was a search, there was some quest that you were already on. And at some point in that quest, like I popped up and you're like, okay, let me follow this and see where it leads. So I honor that every time it happens. That is the thing that keeps me going. Every day, there are people who are searching on the internet for problems that they woke up and didn't realize they would have. And if I have a solution out there, if it's a 30-minute YouTube video or a plugin or, you know, a post on link, wherever it may be, them discovering that and taking an action and buying something or sending me an email or leaving a comment, it means that I have to be grateful for that. And then the cool thing for me is I always see it as like, whoever does business with me, they don't know it up front, but my intention for them is so positive and so abundant and so rich that like, they're not going to walk away without some transformation happening somewhere, something good happening as a result of our interaction or their interaction with my stuff somewhere.
I think that is so powerful, especially in today's age where, you know, people are just trying to get rich and they don't know where to start and they don't know. And because they don't know where to start, because they just want to get rich and not make problems, it's just a reoccurring problem over and over.
It's funny you say that, because when I started my journey, it was very much about how the hell do I get rich? And so after you spend a decade of like, how the hell, you know, asking that question over and over again, and me, I'm very skeptical. I don't just believe things off of surface value. Like, I have to really understand something. Like, I have to understand it from end to end before I can say, okay, I know what that is, right? So this whole thing of like making money on the internet and what I call making a living, where your time is not attached to it. I figured it out right halfway through, you know, maybe 4 or 5 years ago. I was like, oh, I'm in the dream now. But I still didn't believe it, because I'm like, all right, I still have to cross off, you know, I still have to like revalidate this dream that I'm in to make sure that it's really real, right? You hear these stories of like people winning the lotto and then they lose it because they don't have the right equilibrium in relationship with money. So for the past 4 or 5 years, I've really been digging into like, all right, like really, really, like how do you really get, like what is the repeatable thing that you can pass on to someone so that they can get rich? Because that's what I was looking for. And when I discovered it for myself, I'm like, how do I know this can work for more people? So I've spent time really trying to get to that root of like, what is the thing that I feel convicted about that I know for certain that if someone has this, whether it's a belief or a value system, they will inevitably get rich. And I think I'm there right now. I think I found it. I've got a book I'm working on called You Are a Money Magnet. And in that book, I'm really unpacking like what these beliefs are and what this alignment is that I've discovered as being like a wealth attractor that allows people to come to you with money, like here, take my money. And it's everything we've talked about already, which is being mindful of what the needs are of others more than your own. And that's what makes it so difficult, is because when you see people in certain positions, you're like, oh, you know, they're not doing it in an honest way, or they're not doing it with positive intentions. And that really can throw you off. So I've had to really learn for myself, like, okay, this thing really works if you can hold a certain mindset and you act on that. Opportunities show up, things show up, people show up, and you're rich, you know, you're as rich as you want to be.
We've talked about a lot that I think has, you know, cultivated your mindset to where it is now. Is there anything we're missing? But what's the education look like? The education process that you've taken in that last 5 years that you were talking about?
So for me, it's like, it's really been my business and my entrepreneurial journey has really been a spiritual journey. And the business side has just been the external side, part of a spiritual experience. And so growing up, I was always grappling with belief. What do I believe? Who do I believe? Like, what are the ultimate truths of reality? These were like the things that my teenage, adolescent, you know, younger self was trying to figure out. And growing up without a lot of money, naturally it was like, okay, well, what do I need to get rich at the same time? So I was trying to figure out like, you know, what are the truths of reality? Because if these things are true, then I should be able to get rich. Like there should be some kind of, I should be able to reconcile, you know, some kind of a spiritual thing with business. And so that's the thing that I've really been working to reconcile, is how can I be like some spiritual person, nature person, and still actualize my dreams on this, you know, in this reality.
Obviously, your mindset is super powerful and super in a place where you've worked to get it to. Mm-hmm. Has there been any specific education that you've had that's really helped with that?
Yeah. So for me, it's like, it's been learning myself, right? It's been like a lot of journaling. I have like stacks of journals, and what I will do, I'll periodically go back through. So I'm always capturing what I'm going through in real time. If I'm going through a crisis, a financial crisis, whatever, if I'm going through a low point, I'm really intentional about those low points, because I know that's where the transformation happens. I know that if I'm at a low point, it means that I have to surrender something. I have to give something up. And because when you're going through a crisis, it's very difficult to see outside of where you are in time, I journal everything so that as time progresses, a few months later or a year later, I could reflect and I can learn from myself. I can read my journal and I can say, oh, okay, so I've been there before. Or, you know, here's how I grappled with this the last time, or wow, that was some real good wisdom you had a few years ago. Like, what happened to that? Maybe you need to reintegrate that in your daily practice now. So my learning has mostly been self-learning, like learning who I am at the core, so that I can show up wherever I need to show up, however I need to show up. And I don't have to be afraid that this morning I was getting ready for this call, I'm like, crap, man, I'm late. Like, you know, me and Corey, we've already like rescheduled already. Like, I don't want to disappoint him. I don't want him to think like, oh, this guy is not taking him serious. But I was literally just having like an internet difficulty for 20 minutes that I had to figure out. Right. And in a previous time, that would have given me like a whole lot of anxiety. Like, I would have, my mind would have been going through like all of these negative things and just bad states. Right. But now I'm like, when it resolves, it will resolve. Corey will be all right. I'll tell him exactly what happens, you know, and we'll get on with the conversation. So like for me, that's a big shift and change in how I would have responded to something, you know, 10 years ago than how I respond to those things now.
Journaling and learning more about yourself and being able to identify, you know, the ways you're behaving. So you can identify a way, but how did you change that way of thinking? So like, you used to be really anxious during a certain, maybe anxious isn't the right word, but you used to feel that certain way.
Yeah.
How did you shift that perspective to be able to change yourself in those situations?
So I wouldn't have been able to do it without time. And in the beginning, the thing I wasn't conscious of was time. I wanted everything immediate. I'm like, mm-hmm. Growing up, things came really quickly to me. Like, I didn't need to spend a lot of time learning something before I got it. I was someone who got things quickly. So when I got into this online entrepreneurship space, I was looking around at everything and I'm like, oh, I get it. I get it. Oh, I get what they're doing. Oh, I see the magic trick over there. Oh, I see that trick. And I wanted everything to just happen for me immediately. I'm like, all right, I take the leap. 6 months later, you know, I'll catch flight. All right, maybe it didn't happen yet. Give me another year. Okay. All right, give me another year. And so as time progressed, it was like things had to change naturally. My environment changed, right? I went from being in a corporate environment where everyone around me, we're all doing the same thing, we're all in the same kind of mindset, to think that you could do something different or go outside of the cubicles that we were in made you different. It made you, you know, like, oh, you've got courage or whatever those like attributes are. So the first leap out of cubicle world, it brought me into like a digital world where I'm like, okay, this is different. And so as time progressed, my environment changed. And as my environment changed, it gave me more opportunities to change, because the easiest way to change is to change your environment. Because as humans, we naturally mimic our environments. We naturally seek to regulate and relate to the things around us. So that includes the beliefs and the ideas and the values of the people around us. To answer your question, the thing that enabled the change was time. Because in time, I was able to move through different environments, whether it's physical environments or digital environments, and just expose myself and immerse myself to different ways of thinking and being and doing business. And as I went through each of those environments, I'm like, does this resonate with me at my core? And most of the time it was no. Most of the time I was finding something where I was like, ah, that's not really me. I can't really stay here for too long. I got to take what I need and keep going. I'm literally kind of like at the end of that journey where I can finally kind of rest in myself, knowing that the environment around me is really the environment that I have now created. And I'm no longer just falling into different worlds, happenstance. It's a more intentional process.
I think this advice that you're sharing, you know, whether it's advice or even just, you know, your personal journey, it's so helpful to so many people, especially the people that get stuck in cycles. You know, they want more, but it's just a vicious cycle of back and forth, same way of thinking over and over.
Yeah, it's a lot of giving up. So I have a mantra: the same thing that you think you need, give it up, and that same thing will set you free. The hardest thing for people to give up are relationships. And you always hear like, there's no one at the top, or all of these kind of like tropes that can feel kind of toxic sometimes and kind of icky, because you're like, wait, I don't want to be like an a-hole and like just throw away my friends or just throw away, you know, people who I care about. But if you want something different than the people around you, Like, you have to let go of the thing that binds you, the bonds that you have with those people. And a lot of those bonds are based off of belief and values. And so it is incredibly difficult to let go and surrender those things. That's literally been my journey, is like having to let go of things that I once believed, not because I really believe them, but because the people around me believe them. And I didn't want to disturb the people around me. I didn't want to like rattle their worlds, but I had to, you know, I had to take myself up and like do something different for myself. Trust in the process that, well, if I want to become rich and I want to be able to be abundant and give from, I can't give there where there's nothing. I have to go somewhere else. And then maybe I could bring something back. That's how I've kind of thought about it. I thought my way through it is like, you got to give it up.
So there's a question I like to ask all the entrepreneurs that I interview, because it's so fascinating to see like the early days. What was your childhood like? Did you always have that entrepreneurial drive?
Yeah, I definitely had a penchant for like, oh, I want to make money. Like, you know, I can sell something. I think the first thing I sold were like these paper origami guns in fifth grade, like 25 cents. Made the shotgun size one that I sold for $1.25. So I always knew that I could make things with my hands and I could sell them. I had a car wash business when I was about, I think maybe 14, 15 in the neighborhood. I was selling candy on the school bus from BJ's. I'd buy the $10 pack of candy, sell the 30, you know, Snicker bars for $1 each. I'd make $20 every box. Yeah, I was very entrepreneurial minded when I was a kid, for sure. But I also grew up in a lot of different environments. So I was born in the UK. I lived in England, in Jamaica for a bit as a kid, moved back to the UK, then came to the United States when I was about 8. And then when I was here, I still moved around to different schools, started getting bused to a school in the suburbs. And so like my first, I guess you can say 13 years, there was a lot of change, you know, a lot of different schools, a lot of different cultures, a lot of different things. And so that process, I think, helped me later on, where it's like, yo, you got to go through all these changes again, except this time you're an adult and you're the one steering the ship. But as a child, I wasn't the one steering the ship. And so it was difficult, because I always had to change something about myself in each new world. So the first thing being, how do you speak, right? You're coming from the UK, now you're growing up in Jamaica. Okay, you got to speak like a Jamaican. You know, you don't have to, but naturally you mimic what's around you. And then you move back to the UK, and so now I'm mimicking that, move to the state. So I always had to change how I spoke. I always had to change who I was in some fundamental way. And your voice is a very fundamental part of who you are. So having to change my voice while it's developing meant that there were certain parts of myself that got arrested, certain parts of myself that couldn't like continue growing because they were stuck in like the 7-year-old phase of me, or, you know, the 13-year-old phase. Mix that with, you know, a desire for entrepreneurship, and that's my story.
At the end of the interview, you know, and the personal, obviously we've been here a little while with the personal insights in that. How important is it, do you think it is, for someone to find a niche specifically if they wanted to start a business?
It's what got me going, right? Just having a focus. I think there's a lot of debate around what a niche is. And I think that is what sometimes gets people confused, because maybe they imagine a niche as something too restrictive or too limiting. And they believe that, well, if I just focus on this one thing, then I'm denying myself all of this other opportunity and all of this other potential and possibility. So I think that's the conflict, because I had the conflict and I related it to being a young man who wanted to have a lot of girls, right? And trying to figure out, well, they say I got to have one and get married. So how do I reconcile, you know, my youthful desires? But the way a mentor told me, he was like, start with one. And then, you know, if you master that one, then you can move on to another. And so the niche that I started with was Squarespace. But as that grew, there were so many different sub niches within that that I could focus on. It gave me a framework for how to niche down in other places as a starting point, right? Like, you can't count to 10 without going through one. So I see the niche as one. It's just your starting point. It's not the end all be all. This isn't where you have to be forever, but it's the thing that gets you to focus enough to get to two.
What skills or knowledge do you think is essential for running a successful online business?
Definitely marketing. And for me, that marketing is simply being able to see the perspective of buyers and sellers in the thing that you sell. For me, that's what marketing is. It's a perspective game. It's, do you understand what the buyer is going through? And do you understand what the seller is going through? Because a market is simply a place where buyers and sellers meet. And the marketer is someone who facilitates that. Facilitating a relationship between two people means helping them to understand each other. That is the skill that I think is most important as an online entrepreneur, is really understanding people. And I think that comes through understanding yourself, because when you understand yourself, you realize, oh, I'm not that special. I'm not that unique. The things that I've been struggling with by myself alone, there's millions of people out in the world who have been struggling with those things too. So that understanding that I'm not alone, which is why every time you read a sales letter, the first message is like, do you struggle with these problems? You're not alone. And the person on the other side is like, wait, get out of here. Tell me more, because in my reality, I'm alone. But in the true objective reality, we're all one in the same in so many different ways.
What advice would you give to someone looking to start their own online business, particularly in the digital product space?
To follow their interests and to stay true to their interests. That's an easy thing to say. Your interests have never been valued. I mean, if your interests have been valued, right? I've obviously profited from my interests, but there was a point in time where I was afraid of sharing what I was interested in. And so that is the skill set that I was talking about of sharing, where it's like, the more you share your interests, the more opportunities there are for you to go deeper in those interests and to eventually profit from those things. So that's where I would start, is just staying true to the things that you really care about, because if not, you'll end up doing something you don't really care about. And to me, that's not the point of the game.
And finally, where can people find more about you and your business?
OmariHarabin.com. That's my personal website. And from there, you can kind of take little go off into different places.